Well, the title of this workshop is The School for Mars, Youth, Tone, and Discipline. I would subtitle this talk School Culture, or Establishing School Culture. It's kind of fun to title workshops, and this title is from a phrase that I've heard Doug use often. And it refers to, as we've looked at the students at Logos School, and we've looked at students in other schools, we see some distinctives or some differences. And sometimes, to those we come in contact with, maybe students from public schools, we wonder and we guess or surmise that that's a perception that they must have of the students of Logos School. And Doug will refer to this situation and say they must think we're from Mars because we tend to do things differently. But it has to do with youth and with discipline and with establishing school culture. The first point that I want to start with is the importance of modeling by your staff and by your administrators. And God has many things to say about teachers and about their standards. I wanted to revisit a couple of them. In James it says, "Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." And this is in the context of a passage that goes on to talk about the importance of controlling the tongue. And there's a strict standard for judgment and a higher standard for judgment for those who teach. In Matthew, Christ said, "But if anyone causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a large millstone hung around his neck and drowned in the depths of the sea." And I think these passages speak to the importance of the role that teachers serve, because we're dealing with children, and children are precious to God. In that passage in Matthew, Christ blessed the children and said we have to be like them to enter his kingdom. And so God has a high view of children, a high view of parenting, and as we're serving in the place of the parents and helping them fulfill their responsibility, we need to accept that responsibility and remember how God views the work that we're doing. It's a high standard. Teachers have tremendous influence on their students. When you look at teachers in a school, there isn't a question about whether or not teachers will influence their students. They will. The question has to deal with what kind of influence the teachers will have on their students. Will it be a positive one, encouraging the students to godliness, encouraging them in their faith? Or will it be one that hinders their faith and hinders their growth? There is just no question that the contact the students have on a daily basis with their teachers is going to make a difference. Luke said, "A student is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher." One of the applications of this, then, is this is something that we need to think about when we start to look at applications and we start to look at hiring. When we look at teachers at Logos School, their knowledge of the trivium, experience with classical education, would probably be my third priority for what I desire in a teacher, if I could pick what I would want. It is important, but there are some other things that are more important. And the first thing we always ask, as you do too, I'm sure, is to hear their testimony. We want to have a sense of their own personal walk with Christ. We want to know something about the quality of their Christian life and the quality of their Christian walk, because they're going to be models for their students. And one of the goals of the school is to encourage the students who don't know Christ to come to a knowledge of Him, and encourage those who do in their walk. So this is really the first thing that we look for, is what kind of life do they have? Do they have evidence and fruit of the Christian life that is visible, because they're going to be modeling? The second thing I would mention is a real love of children, a gift to teach in some form. Those are important characteristics. And then the third. But the first thing, it really starts with their own personal Christian walk. We'll never fulfill our goal of encouraging kids in their faith if we don't have teachers who can demonstrate that for them on a daily basis. Well, I tried to think of some examples that I've seen in my time at Logos of how students are influenced by their teachers. Would it surprise you if I told you that this summer, Jim Nance has three or four high school students getting up at 7:30 in the summertime every day to spend an hour and a half studying logic, not for any school credit, just on their own? Would that surprise you? You stop and think about teenagers and you think about summertime and their love of sleeping in and you think, they're getting up at 7:30 to come do that. Well, why? Because a student becomes like their teacher. Because these students have teachers who love that subject and enjoy teaching it. And they've captured an interest in that. It's an example of the influence that teachers had. Would it surprise you if you've heard Wes Callahan? Our students are required to take classical literature their junior year. Would it surprise you if I told you that after the Christmas break, one of the sophomore girls brought into class a book that she had received, leather-bound, you know, gold-gilt edging, and it was a copy of Homer's Iliad and Odyssey. This is a year before she's required to take this class. And not only was it something that she asked for Christmas, but it was excited enough and meant enough to her that she brought it to school to show the rest of the kids. Well, if you know Wes Callahan, and you know his love for the subjects that he's teaching, it wouldn't surprise you at all. She just wants to read it on her own for the love of the subject that she's seen in her teacher. Here's something else that I find pretty interesting. This is a shirt, a t-shirt, and it has two Greek letters on it. In English, they would be L and K, standing for Logos Knights. This was designed by some of the high school students at Logos School. And the kids wanted to have some school clothes, and so they made this up, and Nathan had a lot to do with this, and they put a little nightwear label on the back. And I don't know, but I stopped and I thought about it, and they made these models and they had them printed and then they sold them, and I don't know, we had about 110 secondary students last year. At least 30 students bought these t-shirts and then wore them and really enjoyed wearing them to school. And I just stepped back and I looked and I thought, this is 1995. This is the modern age in the United States. I know kids like t-shirts, but if you tried to envision, could you create a school where the students on their own, the administrators, the teachers had absolutely nothing to do with this. This was a student council project. Would design a t-shirt with Greek letters on it to represent their school, spend their own money, and then proudly wear it. Does that surprise you? It really struck me as evidence of the influence that teachers have upon students and how much they enjoy it. Now, I don't think it's, at first you might think it's weird. Well, it's kind of strange because it's not common or it's not popular, it's not what everybody else is doing, but that's part of the point of this talk. It's distinct and unique, but I think it's evidence. As you've heard about Logos School and you've heard of some of the vision or our philosophy of education, if you stop and think about a student will be like their teacher, it doesn't surprise you at all. They have teachers who are studying Greek on their own. It's no school credit, just the love of learning, the knowledge that they want to have in their own life. And we've had students gather together with those teachers after school because they want to learn Greek. And they've gone to their teachers and said, can you help me? Because I want to learn this. Just an extracurricular activity, but not a common one. Those are examples of a student becoming like their teacher. Now, we've also had to recognize this, and we've made some guidelines for our teachers and some of the things that we've asked them not to share about because of the influence that they have. And let me give you an example. Among our staff, and among your families, there are real different standards on what types of movies parents watch and what types of movies they allow their children to watch. And our teachers reflect those differences. And we found ourselves in a seemingly innocuous conversation. Maybe it's between classes or maybe it's during lunchtime where a teacher would just be talking with students and maybe they'd talk about a movie that they'd gone to see or a video that they'd rented. And the difficulty is if the teacher shares about a movie that they've gone to see, and before God, I'm not talking about something that would be sinful to watch. maybe someone else would object to it. We didn't want to put the students in the position of going home to their parents and saying, well, Mr. So-and-so said, watch this movie, and he said it was good, and then the parents wishing, you know, I really, that's not the kind of encouragement, because we have a different standard in our home. Tom talked this morning about recognizing governments. We don't think the teachers did anything wrong by going to the movie, but what we want to do is recognize that parents have the right to make a house rule for movies. Teachers have a strong influence. So we've just put in a guideline. We've asked our teachers, you know, not to recommend videos or movies to their students. You know, it would be one thing if they knew the parents and they knew the standards of the parents and were being acting consistent that way. But we don't want to violate those parental standards. Well, something else that has to do with establishing culture is music. Our teachers and administrators have a broad taste in music. And sometimes there'll be opportunities for different activity classes, maybe to play music as kids are working. And we've asked the teachers to restrict that in their classes just to classical music. It has to do with culture. It has to do with respecting house rules that parents set and different standards. But it also has to do with creating an atmosphere for learning and an environment in the classroom. And it's fun to see a lot of the kids begin to recognize and enjoy different composers and the popular music that they've written and begin to request that they get that music for themselves and play it at home. It has to do, again, with that issue of culture. Well, one other point on the influence of teachers. This isn't just, I don't want to just paint this as, well, there's some pitfalls that teachers have to watch out for. This also is where the real opportunity for ministry to students comes from. Again, relating to Tom's talk this morning, we're not a church. We're a school. We had a teacher that we interviewed last week on Monday, and I think he was interested in what aspect of personal ministry could he expect to have with the students at Logos School. And it doesn't come through a lot of one-on-one counseling situations with the students. That's not our role, unless the parents have delegated that specifically to us. It comes by the way they day-to-day live their lives before the students. We're a small school. The students get to know their teachers. A few years ago, we had a full-time math teacher, had several children. One of his children was about 3 years old and had a seizure, suffered some brain damage as a result. And that teacher had a powerful testimony to the students in our school by the way he handled that crisis in his life. It was an incredible witness to those kids, and one that I heard them comment about afterward. They watched him deal with this day to day, how he handled it, how he trusted God, how he had faith, how he related to them in the midst of it. Again, teachers having an influence on their student, it spoke volumes. And he didn't have to stand up and give a talk about how Christians should handle trials in their lives. He lived it day to day. Well, next, another aspect of culture, rules. Rules communicate values to your students. Rules communicate values. And rules really focus on the what. As you establish rules in your classroom, if you're a teacher, or in your school as an administrator, I would encourage you to have a reason for every rule. My personal preference is the fewer the rules, the better, because it's important that we have rules that we consistently enforce those rules. Otherwise, we're ending up telling the students one thing and doing something else, and that's not a way we want to model for them. But we need to ask ourselves why we have the rules that we do. There are a couple of reasons why we might. One, they may be biblically based. They may be based on some standard that God has established for us. Take, for example, one of our rules that requires students to be disciplined by a principal if they show disrespect to a teacher. Well, why do we have that rule? Well, one of God's standards for Christians is they show respect to those who are in authority over them. If we didn't have that rule, we wouldn't be able to enforce a standard that God has established. We might have another rule, and we do, about how students relate when their teachers ask them to do something relating to the area of obedience. Okay? Children are to learn to obey their father and mother. They're trying to teach that to their kids at home. That needs to be reinforced in the school. It's a standard that God established. God has standards for language, for the things that we say and the things that we're not to say. And there are standards for self-control. These are some examples, and I think the reasons for the rules need to be communicated to the students. One of the things that I try and do with the secondary students, if I have an occasion to have to discipline one of them, is talk to them about what was wrong and why was it wrong. What standard was broken? But these communicate values. By establishing some of these school rules, the culture of your school is what God says about our behavior is important to us, and we're trying to put it into practice. And these types of rules, especially the one on respect, will make your school distinctive, especially from the government schools today. As I've met with a couple of teacher applicants or parents, I've asked them, you know, why are you interested in Logos School, or what is it that you want for your children? And one of the things that I consistently hear back from them is that, well, kids today are so disrespectful. And in the general population, I believe that's true. I can tell you that it's not true of the students at Logos School. As time has gone on, I've been the secondary principal for 5 years. I have less and less occasion to discipline students each passing year. And there are very rare instances where I've had to discipline a child for being disrespectful to a teacher. It does happen. The main reason it happens is because the children are being taught to be respectful to their mother and father in the home. And the school is reinforcing that. And we're training the children, and it's becoming a habit. Well, not all the rules that you'll have in the school will be biblically based rules. Sometimes when you have a group of 50 students or 75 or 200 or whatever it is, you have to make some other rules just so you can coexist together in peace and be able to get the work done that you have before you. So you have what we refer to as house rules. They're not based on any biblical standard. There's nothing wrong with house rules. But I think it's important that the kids understand the distinction and that you understand the distinction. If a student violates a rule that's biblically based, that's a moral issue. If they're a believer, they need to be encouraged to make that right before God, in confession of their sin. Now, if they violate a house rule, there still may be a sin problem because they've been, you may consider it disobedient, but it's not the same category of rules. Let me give you an example. What about class rules? Most all classroom teachers are going to have some rule relating to when the students talk and when they don't. Okay? It may not specifically or explicitly be based on a biblical standard, but what do we want to teach kids by that rule? We want to teach them self-control. There's a reason we have that rule. We need some order in the classroom so that we can conduct business. Another example of a house rule might be if you're late to class, there's a penalty. If you're tardy, if class is supposed to start at a certain time and you're not there, there's a penalty to that. Well, we need that rule for order. We also have that rule because we want to teach kids to be responsible. They're going to go up and grow up, and in whatever role they end up, it becomes important as adults to be able to be somewhere on time. This applies to teachers as well as students, by the way. And sometimes as administrators, that's something that you need to remind to them. Because again, they're modeling. It's important that your teachers to class on time if you expect the students to be to class on time. Another rule that I think has really had a big effect on our culture is a rule that it's hard to talk about without sort of laughing or smiling, and that's the rule that students refer to as the PDA rule, and we didn't invent it. It has to do with public displays of affection between a student and if they have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. At Logos School, we don't permit it. It has a big difference, a big impact on culture, and if you want to see it, go into a school that doesn't have a rule, and the difference to you will be obvious. It communicates something to the students about how we want them to relate to one another in the school. It has a real impact on the culture of the school. When you walk into the school, you see it. Another example of a house rule, I think all of the secondary students who've grown up from the elementary schools could almost recite with Mr. Garfield some encouragement that he gives to them as elementary students at the beginning of the school year. And he always talks to the older students about their responsibility and the way that they treat the younger students. And it is, I don't mean it's a canned thing. Tom does that every year because it's important. It's important to him. And it is important. And the kids, I think, grow up that come through Logos School knowing that if you're an older student, we care about how you treat the younger students. We're watching, and it makes a difference. And if it's not done right, you need to expect to be addressed about that issue. That's part of culture. That's part of being aware. If you're a junior high student and you're in the auditorium, and it's PE time and the preschoolers need to walk through to get to their classroom, you need to watch out for them and be aware of them. House rules and biblical rules. Rules communicate values, because your students may not ask themselves out loud, but what they wonder about is, why that rule? Why is it important to you to have that? We have some kids, not all the students at Logos School are Christians. And one of the things, the biblically based rule can be a way to teach them some of God's standards for behavior. And they can learn from that. What about applied discipline? We talked about the what a little bit. What about the how? The decisions that you make about discipline also communicate values to your students. If you haven't learned yet, and I doubt Logos is unique in this way, you have to become aware and assume the grapevine effect is alive and well and working in your school. I do as a principal, there are very few times, if ever, that I assume that a conversation I have with an individual student will remain a confidential conversation. Okay? It just doesn't work that way. Especially if I walk into a class and I open the door and I wave to a student, I ask him to come see me, the rest of the student class go, oh, and most of the time it has nothing to do with the students being in trouble. But I know if when there are occasions that I have to discipline a student in my office, the rest of the students in the class know. And that student's going to go back and he or she will be asked, what happened? What'd you do? What'd Mr. Spencer do? What's your discipline? And in that interchange, values are being communicated not only to the student that I spoke with and Mr. Garfield spoke with, but to the rest of the students in the student body. Again, some of the things that I talk with the students about because of this is, why was this behavior wrong? By what standard? I want the students to understand that. If they violated a biblically based rule, or if they violated a house rule, and how can you make up restitution for this act? I was pleased last year, the students helped me do an evaluation of the teachers and of myself. And one of the things they said about the administrators is they have a reason for the rules that have been established at the school. I was very thankful for that. That they understand it's not just because we like being in charge and being in authority and making them do things. Well, let me give you some examples of how this applied discipline has worked. I had a problem this year with some boys in one of our junior high classes. And the problem related to being tardy to class in one particular student, we keep track of those things. And it got to a point where he had been tardy to a total of 20 times in the course of a semester. Now, you might ask yourself, what was the matter with me? Why did it take me so long to wake up? And that was part of the problem. I had to redo some things, so I kept my finger on the pulse a little bit. But I was aware of it before it became a problem. And I was trying some different things that I've always tried to do before with students to teach them to be responsible and get to be the class on time. And obviously they were having no effect. In the time that I've been secondary principal, I hadn't spanked any secondary students. I hadn't used that form of discipline. I had permission to do so by the board, by the policy. I had their backing. I hadn't because I found most of the times, or a lot of times, I'd ask students, you know, if their parents still spanked them at home, and most of the time, junior high and high school kids would say no. That's a form of discipline that the parents had no longer used. But I was searching for a solution to this problem. It was very important that it be addressed, that it couldn't be allowed to continue. Because when I had a student behave that way, that was communicating something to the other students in his class, the 24 others. Oh, there really aren't any consequences about getting to class on time. And I knew I had to address it. I had occasion to meet with his parents at a parent-teacher conference, and I brought the issue up. I said, this is what's going on, and this is what I've tried to do. And the next time he's tardy, I'm going to spank him. I said, okay, sounds good to us. And they gave me their support for doing that. And so I did. I had Mr. Garfield come down and witness this. And I didn't see him again for 6 weeks in my office after that spanking for being tardy. God's word is true. It was a blessing to him. And not only was it a blessing to him, it sent a message to the rest of the boys in his class who also quit being tardy, because he'd gone back and he told them what had happened, and the word had gone out. And that was loving to those students, and it was loving to him, because he learned responsibility, and the rest of the students saw, yes, they have a standard and they're being consistent in its enforcement, and it communicated values to the rest of those students, and it said something about the culture. Another example of how I think about this sometimes is we have a dress code at Logos that requires students to dress in such a way that's neat, clean, and modest. One of the things I think about, the teachers, the procedure that we use, if a student comes into school and they're dressed immodestly, and this happens more often with young girls than with young boys, the teachers will come and mention it to me that I need to go and look at a particular student. Now, one of the things when you're dealing with discipline as an administrator, you have to not only consider the effects of this child, but you have to consider the effects on the rest of the student. And I know if a student walks into school and it's something that's borderline, the rest of the girls in that class and more are aware of that. And so they're watching. What happens? Did Mr. Spencer address it, or was it okay? Because by doing that, we're defining the standards. And that has to do with establishing culture. But again, you're relying on that grapevine effect. Well, what about suspension and expulsion? We've done that. We have the policy to do that. Different reasons can lead to suspending a student from school or expelling a student from school. And again, I made a mention in your notes to the blessing of limits. There need to be limits. There need to be boundaries. God's word tells us the kids need these things. And part of my practice, if I have to suspend or expel a student, is to go into that class while that student is absent and to tell them what's happened and what's been done and why. Now, I'm not trying to embarrass anyone, but I know the grapevine's going to work. Rumors will get started. And partly, I go in because I want the students, the rest of the students in that class, to know the truth. I want to avoid rumors. I want them to know what really happened firsthand for me. But I want them to know something else. I want them to know that there's a standard that's been violated. And it reinforces to them again, here's a limit. Here's an expectation for how we expect our students to behave. Here's a boundary. Yes? If I can live with it for a day, I may wait toward the end of the day so as not to embarrass a student, and then I address them. And that's usually enough because, again, she's going to tell the rest of the kids and the word's going to get out. But if I have to suspend or expel a student, I let the students know what's happened. There's a standard that's been reinforced, and the kids can pray for them. That the discipline will have, that God will use that to bring them to repentance if that's necessary. Use that to mold their character. And then I encourage the kids not to tell, spread gossip or tell rumors. Those are some of the reasons for talking to the rest of the student body about the discipline that's been meted out. Now, I thought about this talk after I wrote the outline, and I left off a key aspect that you need to think about when you're establishing the culture of the school, and that's the whole area of admissions. You need to know, as an administrator or whoever has a responsibility for admitting students, you need to know something about the character of that class. You need to have an intuitive sense. How many of the students in that class are believers? How many of them have fruit in their life? Which way is the peer pressure flowing in that particular class? Are the students who want to do well academically, are they sort of at the top of the heap? Is it cool to study and to do well in school? Are the students who respect their parents and respect their teachers, are they the ones who are in the majority? Or do you have a class that you don't quite have a handle on yet? There's a lack of self-control. There's more discipline problems than you really like. Well, if you're looking at an application, you want to consider the class that they will be going into and the effect that they will have on the rest of the students in that class. The scripture talks to us about the effects of a little yeast and how it works its way through the whole loaf. And we have seen this proven time and again at Logos School. And one of the ways that we've seen it is if we have a student who is a source of a behavior problem, we have seen what's happened if we've had to come to the point where we've had to expel that student from the school and how it can change the whole tone and the whole culture of the rest of a class. And you need to think about that in admissions. One of the things I would encourage you not to do is not to become a reform school. I suspect that you, like us, your primary ministry is going to be to students from Christian homes who've been taught the Word of God, who have parents that understand their responsibility to raise kids and are asking you to help them, as opposed to students who've had discipline problems in other schools and the parents are at a loss to know what to do. They'd pay you three times what you're asking if you'd take their child, but you're probably not going to see them much as you work with them. I think you need to decide if you're, I guess if I can use this word, if you'd be evangelical in nature, and perhaps there's a mission for Christian schools to work with those kind of children. But I suspect your mission is going to be more closely aligned with training kids from Christian homes. We've had very little success trying to work with students, and we did try early when we started the school, whose parents were desperate for a solution. Especially at the junior high and high school level where it gets more difficult. And so I'd have to think, but I can't think of any applications in the last two or three years of students in those situations that I've accepted for admission to the secondary. And it has to do with the problems of yeast. It has to do with the effect that they will have on the rest of the students in the secondary school and the culture and the climate that I want to have. And we do accept non-Christians. But I feel better about accepting a non-Christian student into a class where I know the Christian students are kind of setting the pace. We had a wonderful thing happen last year where we had an 8th grade student who came to the school who wasn't a Christian at the beginning of the year. Wonderful young lady, had started to read the Bible. And as she gave her testimony after she became a Christian, she testified to the way that God used her Bible class and teacher at the school to bring her salvation. And we praise God for that. And I want kids to be able to see how teachers relate to non-Christians and for the kids to learn how to relate to non-Christians. But you really have to think about that yeast. On the other hand, you may have a student in your school who is such a negative influence that you need to consider removing him from the school. Hard decisions take a lot of prayer. It's a good time for counsel of godly advisors. But be aware of that. We also have, the last thing I want to mention about discipline, is we have a policy that we call a gross misconduct policy. We expel students, and we did this year, for certain behaviors, even if they occur off the school campus, outside of school hours. And it goes back to this principle of yeast. The policy is very explicit and very clear that we reserve the right to do that. But it has to do with the protection of the entire class. And you need to consider that. You need to give yourself that leeway if you need it. Now, I was asked, I'm working in an environment, I will tell you, where there are three or four Christian churches in the area who are teaching clearly the Word of God, who at times have practiced church discipline. I have, I enjoy very strong support from parents. But I understand that not all situations are like that. And it may be really difficult for you as a school to make a principal decision on discipline and expel a student because of the resistance that you're going to face by people who aren't familiar with that process at all in any form of church discipline. And you need to do it anyway. If it's a principled decision. If this is something before God, the behavior is such that it's so strong and it's having a negative influence on the rest of the kids in the class, and you've gone through a process and you don't see any hope that this situation is going to change, or there's been a gross violation of sin. If you make a principled decision, even if it creates a ruckus, do it and stick to it. Okay? And we'll come back at the end if you've got some more questions about that. I know it can be difficult, but in the long term, it will help you and be necessary to establish the kind of culture that you want in your school. Well, a few other things related here to culture. Manners count. This is an idea that we first saw in another Christian school in Lewiston. And they had an evening where the students dressed up. It's not a prom or anything like that. And we implemented it. Doug's wife, Nancy, kind of took over this idea. And what we do with our high school students, and I'd recommend that you only try this with high school students. Junior high kids aren't quite ready for it yet. But for a week each year, we take students out of class for an hour a day, and we give them instructions in manners and etiquette and how you conduct yourself in different situations. Table manners, how you conduct yourself if you meet someone else or if you're introducing people. Different kinds of things that are declining values in our society, but yet still important values that we need to teach our kids about manners and protocol. And then at the end of the week, we have a dinner where the kids dress up, and we put them into different situations where they can apply the training that they've received during the week. We've had occasions sometimes where we've had sort of a hors d'oeuvres in parents' house, and there would be adults there that we've invited that the students have not met previously, and the kids know they're expected to get around and to introduce themselves to each of the guests who are there at the dinner. And then there's a certain way that they should conduct themselves when they sit down to eat. And one of the fun things is to see how that lasts throughout the year and sets a tone for the school. Remember, a few years ago before we started this, I had a secondary teacher who was a little bit disappointed in the behavior of the kids. She'd be carrying an armful of books, and the boys weren't in the habit of opening the doors to the classroom for her. And, you know, she brought this up. You know, what can we do to address this? And after we've started this protocol training, I've really seen a difference. Oftentimes we'll drive the junior high kids across the street for PE. And it's very common for the boys to sit down in their seats and let the girls all get off the bus first, and then for the boys to follow them. It's pretty common practice now for the high school boys to hold the door open for their classmates or for the their teachers who are women. And it's a nice thing to see. Now, I don't want to fool you. Logos kids are kids. Sometimes people come in and new teachers come in and they have unrealistic expectations. And in some ways, they're very much active and excitable and full of energy. Typical teenagers in some ways and not in others. But I think you should consider teaching your students in your school certain manners. Again, this would fall under house rules. But it sets a tone for the culture. Another thing that I hear about kids today from people that I've talked to is not only are they disrespectful, but they're sullen and they oftentimes won't communicate with adults. Well, I think the practice that they've received of going up and introducing themselves to new people, again, it makes a difference when you have visitors in the school and the students will acknowledge their presence and speak in complete sentences and looking them in the eye. It's a nice thing. I like it when they represent the school that well. Something else that affects your culture is, what about uniforms? What about the issue of school uniforms? My encouragement to you, as I listened yesterday to the administrator share, a lot of you are new schools or beginning schools, decide this question now. That is a question to be decided when you begin your school. Logos School has been around for 14 years. There are parents among our school and staff who would like to see us move to uniforms, and there are those who wouldn't. I don't want to do it now, primarily because it would be divisive to our school. You know, you have to decide what issues are important. And that would be a hard issue for us to change now, to go to that. We could do it. But it would be much easier if we decided to do it at the beginning. And there are pros and cons of uniforms, and all my encouragement is to you is that you consider that question at the beginning. But that will certainly have an effect. The way students dress will have an effect on the culture of your school. The way they dress affects somewhat how they behave. And you want to think about your standards for student dress. And if you want school uniforms, start with them from the very beginning. See how it goes. See if you like it. It'd be easier to change away from uniforms, I think, than it would be to go to uniforms. You know, kind of a related topic just about appearances. And this one, you're limited somewhat in what you can do. But you know, the appearance of your classroom sets something about the culture or the tone. Some of our secondary teachers, and secondary teachers generally are not as gifted, or maybe they just don't think about making the room look as nice as elementary school teachers. You walk into the kindergarten classroom or some of the elementary classrooms at Logos, and it's just wonderful. What a wonderful place for a child to spend their time, because the teacher's gone to so much effort to put things up. They're so appealing to the students. Well, at the secondary, one of the things some of our teachers have done has ordered prints of different artworks. It sets a nice tone for the school. Now, if you can get polished oak desks and, you know, find lots of woodwork on the walls and stained glass windows, that'd be great too. But within means, I think there are some things that you can do with the appearance of the room that make a difference. And they say something about what you value and your culture. Well, let me finish up by encouraging you along a line of a certain way of thinking. You need to cultivate a willingness to question tradition as you establish your school. It's not a good enough reason to do anything to say, well, schools have been doing this way for a long time, and it was this way when I was in school, and everybody else is still doing it this way now, so we'll continue to do it. That's not a good enough reason. And you need to get in the habit of questioning assumptions. I think this is one of the characteristics of Doug that I've really enjoyed as I've gotten to know him. There's a real willingness to ask a question about why should we do it that way? Who says we should? Why not be different and be willing to be different? And some of these questions, again, will affect the culture of your school. At Logos School, we do something that's pretty non-traditional as far as how we select a valedictorian and a salutatorian. If you look up the definition of a valedictory, it's a farewell address. If you look up the definition of a salutatory, it's an address of greeting or welcome. Well, who says the valedictorian has to be the one with the highest GPA? Well, everybody does it that way. So what? What are the goals of your school? Are the goals of your school to graduate students who have 4.0 GPAs? Is that all you're concerned about? I know you're not. Well, why then is the selection criteria for one of the highest honors that a student can receive solely tied to grade point average? Well, we decided it wouldn't be. We decided we'd make a committee of teachers, and they'd look at grade point average, but they'd look at the fruit in the student's life, too. They'd look at their spiritual testimony and weigh that even more important than grade point average. Can you imagine, as a Christian school, a student who was an outstanding academic student but maybe didn't have all the fruit in their life that you'd like to see, and they're going to stand up at your graduation and represent your school? I think you need to think that one through. What are the goals that you want for students, and be different? We are and we have been. What about social activities? Well, who says that's the school's responsibility anyway? Now, that you may do some, and there's nothing wrong with it, but don't do any social activity out of a sense of an obligation. You really need to ask yourself, is that your role? Is it your role to entertain the students? And we have a lot of social activities at Logos, and really enjoyable times for the students and the staff to be together. But they're really not done because we feel like we have to. They have more to do with the nature of kids and what their interests are, and sometimes working with the things that they're interested in, providing opportunities just for the students and the staff to get together outside of the classroom and build those relationships. Most of them are student-sponsored. where they invite their peers from the school. We don't have a senior class trip. Don't have a senior prom. We've just said we're going to draw a line here. Somebody wants to do that. Parents, you do that. We aren't going to do that. Okay. We have a basketball program. Don't have any cheerleaders, though. Okay. Now, I know some of you from the South, and my wife grew up in Alabama, and she was a cheerleader in third grade, and maybe that's really important, and that's okay. We don't have any moral objection. We just have looked at them and decided that we don't see enough benefit to justify wanting to start that. My point here is not to say to you, here, you should do these things too. That's not my point. My point is for you to create a willingness to think about the things that you're going to establish outside of the academic area that are going to affect your culture and make it the way you want it. And if people come and they look at your school and they think you're weird, well, that's okay. It's all right to be distinct sometimes. I don't want to give you a false impression. I can't say that we sat down as we began to develop our elementary and our secondary programs and we said, now what kind of a school culture do we want and what can we do to bring about the kind of culture and the kind of climate that we want at Logos School? I don't think we did that. I didn't think that way. As I thought about this workshop, I did, though, try and go back and identify the things. I generally like the culture of the school very much. I'm for the most part, very pleased with the tone of our school. And I tried to go back and identify, now, what are the things that led to that? But now you've been in this workshop, so you have an advantage on me. You can think about it ahead of time. Okay? Are there any questions as we... Yes? Well, one of the principle for academic probation is don't let it fester. Come up with a short deadline and some specific criteria and don't nurse along a problem. Because again, if you have a student in a class who demonstrates that academics isn't important to them and they continue to attend the school, that sends a message to the rest of the students in a class and can be a discouragement to them. And we want students to take whatever talents and abilities they have before God and use them to God's glory. So we have a GPA requirement that if you fall below a certain GPA on a quarter, then you're placed on academic probation and you have the next quarter to bring that up or you're expelled. Now, we use that policy for students who have the ability but aren't motivated. Okay, so we don't apply that policy universally, but if we have a student who's got the ability and they're just not self-disciplined or they're not motivated, that policy is designed for them.
How do you determine that ability?
Standardized tests and your teachers, their observation. Yes?
Give us an example of an offense that would be a permanent expulsion.
A violation of civil law, use of drugs. Outside of school. Morning.
Two questions. Would you, I realize this isn't your domain, but would you communicate to a grammar school grade class the reason for a suspension?
My first thought is we've had to suspend far more junior high and high school kids than elementary kids. I'd consider the age, which grade we're talking about. Okay. If it's kindergarten, first grade, I'd say no.
So it'd be somewhere in there that you would draw a line as opposed to the difference between the grammar and the elementary school.
Yeah, and what is the age of the students? You know, upper elementary can handle that, and what the offense was.
The second question. Mm-hmm. We've had issues of discipline related to parents as well. We had some experience with that. How you dealt with that?
I'm not sure. I know what you mean by discipline of parents.
Well, the category would be divisive and destructive gossip
about the school. Well, we assume when we enroll students into the school as part of our admissions procedure, Tom and I make our handbooks available to them before we meet with them for an interview. We want them to get a very clear picture about what Logos School is. We want them to know what our philosophy is. We love it if they'll come and sit in on the school. We want them to understand our distinctives. And we are expecting that when students enroll their students at Logos School, that they're in agreement with those distinctives. And if it became clear that that wasn't the case, then we would consider saying to the parents, this may not be the place for your child, and you may need to look for an alternative. Now, there's a difference there, Marlon. We have some parents who, frankly, I don't think they're all that excited about classical education. Okay, and so maybe that's not something they would investigate on their own. That's a different category. You know, that's more apathy than your question, which seemed to indicate working against the school. Then it's time for the administrator and the parents to talk together and see what's going on. Yes, Tom?
Now, let's go back to that gross misconduct thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have certain guidelines and rules, or where do you draw the line if a student has a beer or gets caught stealing something or gets a girl pregnant or goes to an R-rated movie? How do you know what is gross misconduct?
Well, the first thing, and I mentioned this to somebody yesterday, I remember the first couple of years as an administrator, and I wanted a step-by-step how-to book when it came to discipline. Every situation is different. The nature of the child's different. The nature of the offense is different. And the first year as an administrator, dealing with some of those, Doug was around the school a lot. Tom was there, and so before I made any decisions, I'd go and consult with them. So the answer, I think whenever you bring up a discipline situation like that, the answers are particular to each case. It needs a lot of prayer, a lot of discernment. But violations of civil law are gross misconduct. A moral offense is if there's a clear standard in Scripture that's violated. That needs to be considered too. But those particular examples you gave me, it would be hard for any one of those to tell you we'd always do this if that came about. Because I'm not sure we know how we'd handle some of those until they came up.
Including pregnancy.
Yeah. Yes.
You have in your manual that you have restitution, I believe it's 20%. That includes the cost of the item stolen, plus 20%, correct, which is... No.
Which manual are you referring to?
The
I don't know if we specify a percentage, but we apply that principle in discipline. And it may not work in the area of finances. Maybe if a student's been disrespectful to a teacher, part of the way of making restitution is the student acknowledging to the teacher my behavior was wrong and acknowledging that before the teacher, and that would be an example of restitution. Or another way, if a student has some property, it doesn't belong to them, it belongs to another student, and they destroy that or whatever, part of the restitution is replacing the item that was lost or broken or whatever. Yes?
Deal with the ward assembly.
Yeah, very much. And again, that says something about what you value in your culture. That's a good question. And I mentioned valedictorian, but I think there are some questions to think through. What behavior do you want to recognize with an award? Our society today wants to lower the bar for awards because we don't want to damage any child's self-esteem, and we don't want some children to go home and not have received any type of award. So we're going to give one to everybody, which makes the awards meaningless. We have honor rolls because academic achievement is important. And we want to recognize the students who have done the work and performed well academically. We also have a faculty commendation. The faculty commendation is sort of it's a pat on the back. We may give it to a large number of students. We award them at the end of each quarter. And it's just a way to try to say to the students, you know, we've considered your behavior, your attitude, your conduct. It's not necessarily academic achievement. We just want to say, hey, we know you're working to your ability. Maybe you're not a straight-A student, but well done. We appreciate what you've done. We recognize it, and we want to encourage you to continue to do that way. I know in the elementary grades, the elementary teachers give something to students at the end of the year about the kids who've been outstanding examples to the rest of their classmates. We award those kinds of things, too. Yes.
What do you do with a student who, either in an assembly or consistently in class, demonstrates a sluggardly or apathetic attitude, not either fiddling with something on his desk and not paying attention, or just being out of it. How do you encourage those students?
Well, attitudes are harder to deal with. Sometimes when you have students who have attitudes like that, we'll pray for a clear expression of that attitude that can be disciplined. And I've done that and been thankful to see God answer that. I'm so thankful that the student finally crossed the line, because for their benefit we can now address it. Another way to handle that apart from discipline is to make sure that the parents are aware of it. To get in contact with the parents and say, you know, this is the attitude that we're seeing at school and we need to make sure you're aware of it, and let's talk about some ways that we can address it. Yeah. Yes?
Just to follow up on that a little bit. We occasionally have noticed an attitude of a student that really was a reflection of the attitude of a parent. That also ties off with Marlon's comment earlier about the negative gossip and so forth. A specific example was a child who was asked to give a prepared speech, a 2-minute speech in class, and the speech was on why there was too much homework. And the parent had apparently told the child that she should give that speech to the board. How do you deal with issues like that?
Is it better to ignore them? No, two ways. Now, modeling, remember. Your board should create a grievance policy. And I know one of the administrators mentioned to me yesterday, as part of their application process, they used the Christian Conciliation Service. And parents were aware that this was the practice of that the school would follow. You need to set a policy for when parents have concerns about the school or disagreements, what's the proper method for expressing those? And that needs to be in your handbook. The other thing that relates goes back to Marlon's question. No students at Logos School, mine included, have a divine right to be there. And just because I have a student enrolled in a school, maybe they didn't get the number of office visits to be suspended, but that doesn't mean that they're automatically approved for admission the following year. That may be something where I have to sit down with the parents at the end of the year and say, here's my concerns, and maybe say, no, I don't think so next year, or we've got a concern that we need to address. Okay, so that's a couple other things. Yeah, last question, and then we'll dismiss for lunch. Yes?
Regarding the issue of school uniforms, It seems to me that since you're so careful not to step over the line with areas that really are the business of the family, like love and salvation, isn't telling a parent how to dress his child stepping into that area, and is that why Logos does not require uniforms? And B, what do you do about hair length on boys?
Hair length has to be neat. We don't have a specific length, but it has to be neat. You know, the example that you gave about uniforms and are you impacting in the home, there are a number of issues like that in the school where those two, the school's needs for guidelines and the parental prerogatives, there's some contact, some friction between them. Let me give you another one that I can think of that's the same principle. And that has to do with your attendance policy. Well, what happens if a parent says, you know, on this particular day, it's more important for this child to go and do this with me than it is to attend school? Okay, it's another example of the same principle. So you try and walk lightly. That's not why Logos, I don't think, doesn't have uniforms. Would you agree with that, Doug? Okay. I don't think we feel like we'd be violating parental prerogative if we did that. And there have to be some standards. It works. Homeschooling parents like the independence of homeschooling. Today we're going to go do this. That works in a homeschooling situation. It doesn't work in a school very well. There are some real problems with that. So sometimes you make rules because you have to conduct a school with 100 students. And you try and make your parents understand that, and yet build leeway for them too. Doug, I'll give you the last word.
If a school follows your advice to establish whatever uniform policy is, might or might not have at the beginning, and you have uniforms, then all the parents who apply are agreeing to that. You come to an agreement up front. The problem you mentioned would come into play if we try to change now, for example, because we have some parents who agree to it and some who didn't, and there would be a lot more problems than you would have if you make your decision up front. If you make your decision up front, the teachers are applying to have a child admitted to a school that has uniforms. So that's a parental decision.
All right. Thank you. Enjoy your lunch break.